please, the dance is about to begin.
Whose world is this?
The world is yours. The world is yours.
It's mine, it's mine, it's mine. Whose world is this?
It's yours.
It's mine, it's mine, it's mine. Whose world is this?
The world is yours. The world is yours.
It's mine, it's mine, it's mine.
Hey, yo, y'all, what's going on? This is Aaron bringing you episode 82 of the Semi-Social Life of a Black Introvert podcast. Hope y'all are having a beautiful week, a week of reflection, a week of conception, of birthing new ideas, and a week of direction. You know, it's been a rough couple years. 2021 has been interesting. And it's almost carried on, of course, from the year 2020. We've had to go through a pandemic. We've had to go through social unrest, financial uncertainty. And yet we're still here. We're still here right now, experiencing this day and this time. And I don't know about you, but for me, that fires me up a bit. Because if I'm still here, that means I still have direction. I still have a place that I need to go. I still have things that I need to see. I still have people that I need to meet. This life will confuse you to think that you are lost. Nah, you're found because you're here. You know where you are. But now you just have to get the vision of where you need to go. Direction. You may not know the exact place, but you know the direction that you need to head. You know that you need to switch up your situation, change your outlook. And it all starts with one step. One step, one right step, one step in which you think about it, you ponder, you reflect upon the next move, you have some faith and you take that one step will lead you in the right direction. But the question is, do you trust yourself to take that one step, or will you continue to allow life to bring you fear so that you don't move and that you stay right in the same place and you never change the direction in which you head? I want to encourage you to take that step. Take that step of faith wherever you are around the world. Take that step of faith. That step in which you walk upon your purpose and not cower to your fears. Take that step and believe that you still have purpose on this earth and that you are headed somewhere. Destination unknown, but you were headed somewhere. You don't know the exact place, but that's okay. That's where your faith kicks in. You may not know the exact place. You don't know what may be on the wall. You may not know, but when you see it with your eyes, when you reach that place, you will understand. You will know in your body. You will know in your heart. You'll know in your mind and your spirit that you reached it, that you're there, that you were at your destination and it all happened on purpose. Y'all, let's keep it moving. Let's keep our minds moving. Let's keep our bodies moving. Let's keep our spirits moving. Let's keep our hearts moving because we all have a destination to reach. We all have people to meet. We all have places, new places to see. But we have to be focused on heading, taking that first step in the right direction. You know, it's funny how that sort of leads into the title of this week's podcast episode, Lifestrumentals Volume 6. And we won't stop because we can't stop. You know, this Lifestrumentals series is very important to me. It's one of my favorites because it combines two things that I love: hip hop instrumentals. And of course, life. Hip hop instrumentals are the beat that you hear to any hip hop track. It is the backbone in any hip hop song. And so I took that and combined it with life. Life is something that we're all sharing right now, this moment. And I combined them, making the word Lifestrumentals. using hip-hop as a backdrop to provide you with tools and encouragement, things that are instrumental to help you get through life. And we won't stop because we can't stop. You know, I first heard that phrase from Bad Boy Records CEO Sean Puff Daddy P. Diddy Diddy Combs. I was a huge Bad Boy Records fan back in the 90s. Sean Combs started this label in 1993, and most of my favorite artists ever were on this label, from Craig Mack, rest in peace, to Notorious B.I.G., rest in peace, to Black Rob, rest in peace, to Mace, to The Lox, to Shine, and so many other acts. I remember I was a, I grew up, this is my hip hop golden era, the era in which Bad Boy Entertainment, it ushered in the shiny suit era of hip hop. I would see Diddy, I would see all his artists wearing these shiny suits and dancing in these videos and rapping and really just showing a young kid, a young black kid, the glamorous life, partying in the club, driving the fancy cars, really living it up. It was the shiny suit era of hip hop. And it was really genius because they took these 1970s and 1980s soul hits and really disco hits, and they flipped them and they turned them into hits of the 90s and early 2000s, taking some of the favorite songs from the past and making it new. And so Sean P. Diddy Combs has always been someone who I've admired, especially in a business sense. He created something from a dream using his passion, using his intelligence, his drive, and created a multimedia giant. Even in the year 2021, P. Diddy, Sean Combs is still a household name. You may see him as one of the owners of Revolt TV. You also, if you're old enough, may drink Ciroc. He is a giant in the entertainment industry. And he used his phrase, "and we won't stop, because we can't stop," to talk about the Bad Boy Entertainment movement, how they weren't going to stop, how nothing was going to stop them from achieving success. Nothing was going to stop him from reaching the point of success that he knew was on the inside of him. No challenge, no obstacle was going to stop him, because he couldn't be stopped. The situation would not allow him to stop. The last couple of weeks have been extremely emotional for me. I have watched young black men, a young black man, being shot and killed in Brooklyn Park, Minnesota. I did an episode about it. I also watched the Derek Chauvin guilty verdict, in which Derek Chauvin, of course, the officer that killed George Floyd in Minneapolis. I watched that and just my heart broke still, because another black man is dead. And no amount of years given to an officer, in this case, an officer, can bring that man back. There is no victory when there's such a huge loss. I refuse to celebrate this country, celebrate this guilty verdict, when this country does something right. He should have been found guilty. And yet, it's still not enough. And then on that day in which we heard, the nation heard of the guilty verdict, here in the city in which I live, Columbus, Ohio, news soon spread about the death of Micaiah Bryant, a 16-year-old black girl, not a black woman, a black girl, 16 years old, who was involved in an altercation outside of her foster home involving two former foster children who are now adults. There was an argument allegedly about Micaiah's room not being cleaned. not being cleaned up to the standard in which it should have been. This situation grew out of control, in which a 16-year-old girl had to call the police. The police arrived. She, Micaiah Bryant, had a gun, attacked, fought back, got into an altercation with one of the older foster children, former foster children, with a knife. And the police, law enforcement, shot her 4 times. And Micaiah Bryant was dead at the age of 16 years old. It broke my heart. Because no one should die at the age of 16. It broke my heart because something so small, such as an unclean room, a messy room, led to Micaiah Bryant being shot dead, 4 bullets into her chest by the hands of law enforcement. It broke my heart because every system that should have protected her failed. I talked about it in last week's podcast titled System Failure, A Black Father's Perspective on the Life and Death of Micaiah Bryant. I called it System Failure because everything failed. Every system of protection. She should have been protected more from the system in her community. Micaiah was a foster child. Now, I'm not sure why she was in foster care, but something went wrong within the family circumstance. And I don't want to cast blame within the family, but I hope you get my point. I hope you can see my point and hear my heart. Children are designed to live at home. Home should be a place of safety. Sometimes life hit our lives so hard in which the family scatters. The family has to be separated because the resources aren't there or something is going on within the home that's causing a divide. Micaiah Bryant was in foster care. Her first sort of area, her first system of protection naturally is the family that she's birthed into. And yet we see 16-year-old Micaiah Bryant in foster care. Something happened. Something broke the family system. And listen, I get it. As a parent, I can tell you that I want to protect my children. I will do anything that I can to protect my children because life can hit hard. And then there are things I struggle with. There are things that they struggle with. And yet I want to protect them, but life can sometimes hit. I don't know Micaiah's mother or father. But as parents, I just believe that when life hit them hard. And when life hits hard, our children are affected. Something broke the family system that should have protected Micaiah was fractured. But see, that was not the only system that was broken or failed Micaiah, because also the social work and mental health system failed Micaiah Bryant on that day, because as a black female in foster care, that system, the mental health system, the social work system, is not designed to protect Micaiah. Now, I'm sure that she had people in her corner. I'm sure that she had people, social workers. I'm sure that she had somebody. But when the system itself is not designed to support you or to invest in you, to hold you up, because it's designed for your middle to upper class white counterparts, the system is flawed. the system is rigged to not help someone that looks like Micaiah Bryant. She may receive some resources based upon the trickle-down effect, but Micaiah Bryant, living in the city of Columbus, Ohio, will not get the same resources that, I don't know, Mackenzie Bryant would in the suburbs of Columbus, Ohio. It just won't happen because the system will not allow it. The system is not designed to benefit brown people, to benefit people of color. And on that day, even though she may have some people in her corner, the system that Micaiah should have been allowed to rely on, to receive help from, broke. It crumbled. There was a system failure. And on that day, it failed Micaiah Bryant. Her community also failed her. Those that were filming, those that were just onlookers, those that were participating in the fight as adults. Her community failed her. Micaiah Bryant was 16. At that stage of life, your brain is still developing. At the age of 16, during those teen years, your brain is still forming. And so when it comes to decision making, those decisions that you should make, in which we say you should do this, the brain has not developed to make the right decisions. The brain makes the emotional decisions. It makes decisions based upon emotion. And in this case, Micaiah was full of rage, full of anger. She's 16, being confronted by two adults. She's full of fear, full of hurt. She made an emotional decision to lash out. Those that should have stopped her didn't stop her. Some even encouraged the melee. Her community failed young Micaiah by forcing a 16-year-old girl to make a decision, an adult decision that ultimately ended up costing her life. Her community failed her. Which brings me to the other system, the final system that failed Micaiah Bryant on that day. Law enforcement. Law enforcement failed Micaiah Bryant on that day. Listen, I know people say, well, you know, she shouldn't have had a knife. He didn't know she was 16. What did you expect from an officer when he assessed the situation? I'm not here to call the officer racist. I'm not going that far, nor do I really even believe that. But when I look at the criminal justice system, when I look at law enforcement as a system, it is another system that is not meant to benefit people of color. Look at the history. You do the research on this one. Look at the history and figure out why don't people of color, why are there so many people of color that don't trust the police, law enforcement? Well, we don't trust them because the system was not designed for us to trust it. The system has always allowed itself, the system, to exact punishments upon us that are harsh, that are truly an abuse of power, and that can ultimately and have historically cost us our lives. For all those that said, well, Aaron, what did you want the police officer to do? I'm telling you, like I told you last episode, I wish they would have given Micaiah Bryant the capital treatment. You know, treat Micaiah just as you did the hundreds or thousands of people on the Capitol steps. Yeah, give her that treatment, or give her the Kyle Rittenhouse treatment, in which she can have a weapon in her hands, just as Kyle Rittenhouse did after he shot multiple people and killed multiple people. And as the police were going to the scene, Kyle Rittenhouse, young 16-year-old white boy, had his hands up, and law enforcement drove right by him because it couldn't have been him. He doesn't fit the description. And yet, Micaiah Bryant, her brown skin, will always fit a description. Kyle Rittenhouse could put his hands up with an automatic weapon on his body and be given enough grace and freedom because his skin color gives him privilege, gives him a pass. Because historically, white America, and more specifically, white men in America, have had crimes swept under the rug, dismissed, overlooked. They'll never fit the description because historically, the system is not designed to identify them as the perpetrators. Let's face it, they designed the system. And so, Micaiah Bryant was not a young white male. Micaiah Bryant was a black female. Micaiah Bryant was not given that pass nor that privilege, and therefore her life was on the line. I wish they would have given her the Dylann Roof treatment, the mass murderer who shot up a South Carolina church after church members had prayed for him. He shot him up, and yet law enforcement took him in without harm to his body, not a bullet to his chest. In fact, they took him to Burger King. Yeah, I wished Micaiah Bryant would have received the Dylann Roof treatment with extra cheese, because she's 16. Life should not end at 16. These past couple of weeks have been tough, and yet there's something in me that says, and we won't stop, because we can't stop. I am an educator working in a library. I both work and exist in an education system designed by America. Working in a library system, hear me, a system that is designed by America. This education system designed by America is not designed to benefit people that look like me. I mean, look at the history. Look at the punishment that people of color had to endure just to read a book. Those that were enslaved here in America, if they were caught reading, they would be beaten, flogged, or other just heinous crimes were committed against their families for just having a book, because slave masters, slave owners knew and understood that if they could read, they could write. If they could write, they could communicate. If they could communicate, they would have power. And there's power within knowledge. This education system has consistently sent people of color, and more specifically black children, brown children, into schools that have lacked resource. Look around your city. Where are the resources? Most of the resources are in white areas, suburban areas, areas of affluence, of money. What's the saying? The rich get richer and the poor get poorer. Yeah, well, that's part of the system. The rich, the more affluent, will continue to get richer, whether it be with resources or money or opportunity, while the poor, according to the system that is designed, will continue to get poorer and lacking resources, money. This system, this education system, is an umbrella that covers the system in which I work, the library system, which also historically has kept books out of the hands of people of color. So many black men, black women were not only denied library access, but also beaten, had the police called on them, told that those books, those sources of information and knowledge were not meant for them. If they wished to get books, they would have to go to the colored library that lacked resources. If they wished to enter into a library that was in predominantly white areas, they would face, well, they would face the wrath of white America. Yes, I work in a library system. I'm very conscious of the fact that I work in a system that is not designed for people that look like me, for people that look like Micaiah Bryant. And yet the words that echo in my mind are, and I won't stop because I can't stop. I'm in this system. As a black man in America, I see the system. The system is much like I'm a gamer. When I play my PlayStation, I realize that the game is trying to kill me. And yet I have to adapt to the game. I have to recognize where the attacks are coming from. I have to see what the enemy is, who the enemy is. I have to be able to recognize the challenges, fight through the challenges, fight through the obstacles. I have to be able to defend myself. I have to be able to persevere. I have to be able to take a hit, pick myself back up, and keep on moving to the next level. This is America. So many systems. The system is meant to knock me down. The system is really meant to kill me. But I won't stop because I can't stop. I'm working in the system and it's tiring. I live in the system. Being in America, we live in this system of racial inequity. Being a person of color requires me to wake up every day and realize that I have another fight. I have a list of challenges that are designed to knock me out. I don't know if any of you seen like the Hunger Games, but at the very end of the Hunger Games, once Katniss reaches the Capitol, the game makers have designed a series of attacks to prevent Katniss and her team, I know this goes real deep, but to prevent Katniss and her team from reaching their goal, their surprise attacks. Some of them they can see by using a device. Some of them they know are there, but others they don't. Even the ones that they know are there are challenging. The ones that they know are there are scary. They're hard to get through. And the ones that they don't see, the surprise attacks, those are almost unbearable. That's how I feel each and every day. I see the attacks. I see what the game designers, what the system designers have put in front of me. I can see some, but I don't see all of the attacks. America has a way of blindsiding you, especially if you are a person of color. And yet, I'm still here. And I won't stop because I can't stop. If I stop, there's too much on the line. If I stop, there are people that are looking at me, people that are counting on me to keep them moving. If I stop, they may stop. This is something that I think about as a Black educator, as a Black father. The young people in my life that come to me for counsel, whether they be students or my own children, I think about what will happen if I stop, if I give up, if I throw in the towel, if I just say, you know what, this is just the way it's going to be. There's nothing I can do to change. I'm not that powerful. I think about what will happen to them. What will happen if I just give it all up? What will happen if you give it all up? If the fight that you have, if the road that you were on, if you just decide to quit, do you realize that people are looking at you? That people are relying upon your energy, your movements to plan their next steps? That people are looking to you as a leader? Do you realize that you are helping people get to their next destination? They're counting on you. You can't stop. You won't stop. You have too much to do. You mean too much to these people. As an educator, this year has been a lot different. More students are doing work at home. I don't get to see as many students as what I used to back in the days, which each day I would see between 60 and 100 students a day in the center in which I ran. But I still see enough familiar faces, some graduating college, some graduating high school. Most of them are of color. Most of them are Black or brown kids coming from East or West Africa. All of them are beautiful. All of them have purpose. All of them have a presence about them that I just admire. All of them I look forward to seeing, and all of them look toward me as a pillar in the community, as a father, as a friend, as a mentor, as a brother, as an uncle, as someone who cares about their existence, their lives, them as individuals. When we see each other, it's like we're connecting as a family all over again, every time that we're in each other's presence. When I see them, I see such a bright future. When I see them, I see their gifts, their heart. I see their passion. I see a bit of their purpose, and I'm honored to be in their lives. On the days in which are the hardest emotionally, the days in which I read about a Makai Bryant, I read about Ahmaud Arbery, I read about Breonna Taylor, I read about George Floyd, I think about them as young Black kids, young Black adults. I read these stories and I pray that it not be them. I pray that they have the grace of God, that somehow they will make it through life untouched. I pray that they get a chance to reach their destination. But I also look at them and realize that the fight has to continue, because as the father, as the big brother, as the uncle, as the mentor, as the friend, I have to keep fighting to make their existence better than mine. I have to keep fighting because they need to see that their lives are worth fighting for, that their comforts are worth fighting for, that their existence is worth fighting for, and that I am willing to fight. And I can't stop. And I won't stop, because too much is on the line. I look at my children. My children are 10 years old and 8 years old, and they are conscious of their Blackness. last summer was trying for them, because not only did they have to deal with the pandemic of being separated from their friends, but they had to face the harsh reality of being Black in America, that they could lose their lives because of the color of their skin. They took in this information as a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old. My wife and I, we did our best to educate and to talk to them, but imagine, as a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old, you have to face your mortality. Or you have to worry about mommy or daddy or uncle and your aunt or grandma or grandpa or your cousins being pulled over by law enforcement and being murdered because of the color of your skin, because your skin color is threatening, because your life is not deemed valuable, isn't deemed worthy because of the hue, the tone, the color of your skin. That's a lot to handle as a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old. I took them to a couple of protests last year, and they were afraid. They said, "Daddy, we don't want to be shot." They were afraid until they saw all of the men and women of different colors out there to support them. And as we walked around our state capitol building and we shouted "Black Lives Matter" and "Say Her Name," and we raised our fist high in the air, my 10-year-old and my 8-year-old understood that their lives, although threatened, mattered. That their voices, although America wishes to silence the Black or brown voice, their voice is powerful and it matters. That their presence as a young Black male and female, although young in age, is still threatening to some, but it matters. That something should be fought for, that something should be marched for, that sometimes you have to protest, sometimes you have to raise a fist, sometimes you have to shed tears, because it matters. Sometimes you can't stop. Sometimes you have to find the fight deep within, because you have to keep going, because so much is riding on the movement, your movement. People are looking toward your movement. I talk to my children all the time about their power within, the power that they just naturally have within to not only change their lives, but also change the lives of those around them. We talk a lot, especially in the morning, about making a great day, creating a great day for themselves and influencing, creating or helping someone else, one of their peers, another student in their classroom, someone else within their community, helping them create a great day also by being a person of power and influence. When I look at my children, they're still young enough to call me daddy. And I think, what would they say if they saw daddy stop? What would they say if they saw me stop? If they saw me give up? If they saw me not stand up? If they saw me lay down and just bow in defeat? What would they say if they stopped hearing my voice, if I went silent? If I allowed the system, if I allowed America, if I allowed the pressure, if I allowed the fear, if I allowed the threat to silence me, what would they say? What would they do? Would they give up? Would they stop? I look at them and their faces remind me that I won't stop, because I can't stop. I can't stop because of them. I can't stop because of my family. I can't stop because of my wife. I can't stop because of my students. I can't stop because of you all. I have to keep going. I have to keep fighting. I have to keep speaking. I have to keep leading. I have to keep believing. I have to keep on keeping on. Because although this road is tiring, and God knows it is, although this road has so much hurt and pain and anger and disappointment, my God, I have faith. I don't put my power, my faith and belief in America. I put my faith in God. I have more faith within self. I have more belief about who I am than what I ever would about this country. I don't expect this country to change. But you know what? I expect and I understand and I know and I recognize that I have the power to change this country. I'm not going to stop. I look in the mirror, and when I see my reflection, I remind myself, I look, and it's like, you're not going to stop. I have to keep fighting for me. I can't leave myself out of the equation, because I realize that there's change that I want to see in this world. And while I still have breath, while I still have life, while I still have movement, while I still have power, while I still have my voice, while I still have my mind, while I still have my body, I'm not going to stop. I won't stop because I can't stop. Change is happening. I'm a person that believes in change. I'm a person that believes in power. I'm a person that believes in being empowered. We can't allow this system. We can't allow the power of the system to drain the power that we have within self. That is a ploy of the system that tries to get you to believe that you can't change the world, when really you have the power within. You have the power within your heart, within your mind, within your spirit to create change at any given moment. When I walk into a place, I expect that place to change. I don't look for the change to occur externally. I look for change to happen within me. When I go into an environment, I believe that I could change it for the better. I don't go places looking for help to arrive, because I believe that I'm empowered enough to realize that when I arrive, help is already there. I am the change. You are the change. We are the change. And we will make change happen because we won't stop, because we can't stop. I want to encourage you all to walk in faith, to walk with your head held high. If you need to walk with tears in your eyes, do that. Shed those tears, but keep moving. If you need to walk holding someone's hand as you face the challenges, do that. But keep moving. If you need to walk, if you need to crawl, if you need to climb, if you need to dig through any challenge, do that. But keep moving. Change is happening all around you. And I say that, and I know that, because wherever you go, change is there. Keep fighting. Keep believing. Keep the faith. Keep moving. And we won't stop, because we can't stop. I love y'all. I appreciate y'all. As always, be well.
That's it, ladies and gentlemen. The journey is over.
So let's talk about culture, because culture is everything, right? That's the mission and how you're operating with
us.
Yes. What does can't stop, won't stop mean in terms of your culture? Tell me about the culture you want.
Yeah. Just from, you know, where I come from, there's so many times that you actually want to quit, you know, where the odds are so much against you that, you know, you feel like you may want to stop or pick a easier path or road. And can't stop, won't stop is something that I came up with in my music. I would drop these positive messages, like when I would be doing ad-libs on songs, and it's my movement. It's that, you know, no matter what, if you get knocked down 10 times, get up 11, just keep on getting up and keep fighting and keep learning and embrace the good times, embrace the bad times. But I have something in me that I can't stop.
Adieu, adieu. Parting is such sweet sorrow.